championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell, as always. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform you can find out there. Today we're going to be going over what happened in Iowa State as the Longhorns get walked off by the Iowa State Cyclones to end the Longhorns Big 12 championship dreams. Talk about what happened, what was good in that game. What were some of the many issues, and what's going to happen with the rest of the season? And then after that, talk to y'all about the Baylor game with our friends from Sikkim 365. Darius, how are you doing? I'm guessing not very well.
Life's going to go on. You know, life's going to go on. But
you sure? I don't know. I don't know if the sun shined this morning. I was in bed all day long.
Hey, if it doesn't come out until this upcoming Saturday. For some folks, I understand completely. I understand your frustration. Trust me on that.
Well, let's start off with some happiness here. Let's try to look at the bright side here, some silver lining of this game. All right,
let's
start by the good. There are a few things that were good about this game, and one of them was that much maligned defense. The defense actually showed up in Ames after kind of stumbling out. In the first drive, they looked good. They were 3-for-16 on the money downs at 3rd and 4th down and were holding Brock Purdy to very, very, you know, pedestrian numbers. Oh, you know, okay, he still had 350 yards passing, but still, they looked decent out there. Pedestrian for usually going up against Texas. Let's start off with that. It looked good for what's been happening against Texas recently.
That's fair. After that first drive, when Texas went 3 and out to start the game, Iowa State literally walked the ball down the field. It was 7-0 in the blink of an eye. I was thinking, here we go. That didn't look good. You're not in Austin anymore. But to the defense's credit, to Todd Orlando's credit, after that drive, they got it together. And for the most part, I thought that was one of their better performances of the season. And back-to-back solid performances for the defense.
Right, and after Breece Hall's first 14 carries, the Longhorns held him to 10 carries for 22 yards. So after a little bit of a rough start, they really started to get their stuff together. And most of the aspects of this game, the defense played well. Let's start off with these defensive backs. Because these defensive backs, what do you know? Are pretty good when they get their head around. You had Deshaun Jameson with a pick, Kobe Boyce with a pass breakup, Jalen Green looked pretty darn good, and Caden Stearns had 2 tackles for losses in a sack. DeMarvin Overshown blew through the offensive line multiple times. It was just, those guys had pretty darn good games, aside from Brandon Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing now, we're in the back third of the season. We're starting to see these cornerbacks start to grow up a little bit. This week, Texas played some more man-to-man, closer to the line of scrimmage coverage. I thought they did a great job for the most part. It also makes a difference having guys back there behind them that they know, for the most part, know what they're doing with, you know, Caden Stearns, Foster, Brandon Jones. I was disappointed. Those 2 touchdowns Iowa State did score, they were a result of Brandon Jones blowing his assignment. I thought the cornerbacks did an excellent job. They're getting better. I think they're something to be excited about. They're a bright spot moving forward for this program.
And also Chris Brown did pretty well as well.
He did make some nice open field tackles.
That's true. And looking down at the defensive line, Oscar Giles continues to prove himself as a coach. A lot of times people are questioning his ability to recruit during the offseason, but time and time again throughout the regular season, he proves his stuff as a coach. This is the, third year in a row where he has made a defensive line that has, you know, maybe not the best talent in the world look pretty darn good.
Oscar Giles is a guy that was at Texas while I was there. I can vouch for his coaching ability. He's a heck of a guy. He's a heck of a coach. Guys get better under his tutelage. His track record speaks for itself. Good news for Texas and for him is they got some talent coming in And I Giles has earned his money. They need more guys like him. He gets flack from, you know, folks on the internet, stuff like that about recruiting. But Texas needs, you know, less guys worried about recruiting and more guys that can worry about coaching their guys up and getting their guys to buy in. So for sure. Giles is a veteran guy. He's one of the older guys on the staff. He's one of the shining lights. They need more. The more Oscar Giles you have, I think the better your program will be.
For sure. 100% agree with that. A guy who is more concerned about not so much about the guys he brings in, but how he coaches them, than a guy who is worried about the stars and the ratings that he brings in.
And people's feelings and keeping folks happy. No, Giles is going to work. And if you don't work, you're going to sit. Ask a guy like Gerald Wilbon, who was starting games last season. He hadn't sniffed the field this year. He's a senior. Right. All right? Yeah, Giles holds guys accountable.
Yeah, I completely agree. And another thing that was great about this defense that really made it click in this game was after the first drive, after that, where, you know, you saw a lot of what was the problem or has been the problem this entire year, which is deep blitzes and the front and the coverages not matching. Mm-hmm. The front and the coverages were paired with some of the, you know, blitz schemes that didn't leave the middle of the field wide open or allow them to be taken over. That was a huge boon for this defense to not give up these crazy plays. There were actually some decent plays off of some zero blitzes from this defense. Now, they're also helped out by Brock Purdy letting this pressure get to him. The pressure affected Brock Purdy, and it was a lot helped by the fronts and the coverages matching.
Yeah, I only remember seeing off the top of my head a few safety blitzes. You know, there was more pressure coming from guys like Juwan Mitchell. I saw Overshawn hanging out around the line of scrimmage, B.J. Foster. Those are the guys that you should have going forward. And I think we saw more of that from Todd Orlando because he's got more guys back. He doesn't have to have those guys doing other things that they don't do that well because he can't put guys out there he can't trust. Yeah, again, for the second week in a row, I thought the Texas defense did their job, especially this past weekend. They did their job and beyond. I was waiting for the defense to break, and they never did. Again, outside of two Brandon Jones brain farts, that defense looked like that's the Todd Orlando we've grown accustomed to over the past few years. And I don't think I have as much concern about the defense as there had been the last few weeks. And I think we can officially chalk that up to the ridiculous rash of injuries that they suffered.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The next good things that I think I can say about this team are the wide receivers played tremendously. Well, let me break that down into Brennan Eagles and Devin Duvernay played tremendously. I think those two guys had crazy great games and kept this offense alive, along with Ellinger making some plays with his feet to keep plays alive. That was basically some of the only good stuff from the offense. When the offensive staff finally allowed Ellinger to take control and spread the offense out and kind of throw the ball around, that is when they started to take advantage of what Iowa State was giving them and drive the ball down the field.
Yeah, in the absence of Colin Johnson, I thought Brennan Eagles had what, in my opinion, I don't know about statistic-wise. I know he had 4 for 84. I don't know if he's had one better, but I thought this was Brennan Eagles' best game. I thought he had a little bit of a coming-out party. I'm a guy that's talked about him only being a guy that can run go routes and stuff like that. He ran different routes on Saturday, and he made some big-time catches. That grab he made in the end zone was a grab that, there aren't a whole lot of guys, in my opinion, on this planet that can make a play like that, and he made a special play. Devin Duvernay is a guy that's had over 100 yards in 4 straight games. My issue was it just seemed like Texas, it took them too long to figure out what Iowa State was giving them. Like you said, in the passing game, they had everything there. You had a few drops. You had a few errant passes. The O-line didn't have a great game running the ball, moving in the run game. But as far as protecting Ellinger, I thought they did a solid job. It took Texas too long to start attacking down the field. And the thing is, it was working for them. And then we got into the fourth quarter and we got that final drive. Well, there's 4 minutes on the clock. Iowa State still had all three timeouts. You can't start being conservative until you get them to start burning some of those timeouts. You get them to burn those timeouts by first doing what, Will? You got to get a first down first. Texas came out, and I don't know if we're getting into that right now. Can you edit this real quick? Are we getting into that right now?
Yeah, we can get into the issues now. I mean,
okay.
Besides, I think Ehlinger playing well at times, you know, most of the time. Yeah, there are times where Ehlinger did not perform his best, but I think Ehlinger showed, and I know you disagree with me, but I think Ehlinger showed he's a pretty elite quarterback when given the opportunity with a good game plan.
I mean, Sam's a freaking leader. You know, Sam's a fighter. You know, he's going to give you everything he's got. But I just – my deal – I didn't think Sam had his best game. I thought he was pretty inaccurate at times in this game. I thought he looked a little bit – I don't know if he's battling something, but I thought he looked a little bit slower on Saturday running the ball on design runs. When he took off on the scrambles, he looked fine. That final drive when Texas came out they had two tight ends out there, Jared Wiley and Reese Leitao. I saw John Bird out there. So right off the bat, that's three pretty much complete non-factors as far as throwing the ball. And there was another receiver out there. And they decided to run the ball. And then why was Roshan in the game instead of Keyontae? Did Keyontae get banged up or something? Even though I know he wasn't effective Saturday. Two straight inside runs. The Texas had no success running the ball in the middle of that defense all night long. Stuffed. And then on third down, you go back to your spread look, trips. And then, you know, it's third down, Will. Who's been killing them all game? Who's been killing on third down all year for Texas?
Duvernay.
Duvernay. What does Texas do? They try to run a freaking
tunnel screen.
inside receiver middle screen to Devin Duvernay. Iowa State almost picked that crap off. I think it was a defensive end or something that buzzed out there. I thought it was almost malpractice. By those offensive coaches and whoever came up with that game plan on Saturday. That was a joke. They deserve whatever criticism comes their way. I truly feel like that might have been the worst called offensive game that I've seen from Texas in years. And that goes back even to the Charlie Strong era. Even Charlie Strong, they just weren't very good. This was a game where it was just called like, what the heck are you doing? No, what are you doing?
Yeah, I agree. I think the final offensive drive, you're trying to force the same formations and runs that led to the team gaining less than 2 yards a carry.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to do that, then you deserve to lose that game as an offensive staff.
Absolutely. It was a miracle that they were up 21-20. I could not believe Texas was leading this game and still had a chance to win this game.
And that was when Herman just gave the keys to Ehlinger, was like, win this game for me. And then they took the keys right back away from Ehlinger at the very last drive and tried to play conservative and go back to those run plays versus running right into what Iowa State wanted.
How can you be conservative at the end of the game, but you're going for it, leaving points out there in the first half of every freaking game, going for it on fourth down? Texas lost by, what was the score, 23-21? They turned down the field goal in the first quarter. No guarantee he makes it, but every game this year, Texas has left points out there. But then when it's time to put this thing away, like they always love talking about, imposing our will, you know, they can know what's coming. We're the tougher team, blah, blah, blah. Texas has not been a tougher team this year. I can't – that's got to be the fifth or sixth time this year that Texas had a 4th-and-1, 4th-and-2, and got their butt stuffed trying to run that quarterback power. It worked last year. It worked the year before. Everybody's on to that, and Texas has been beat at their own game a little bit. They were more physical than Iowa State was last year. Iowa State brought it to them this year as far in the physical department. On the line of scrimmage, both sides, defensive line, offensive line, Iowa State brought it to Texas.
I mean, yeah, in the story of this game has to be that offensive ineptitude. 8 3-and-outs is the most by – what is it? What was that stat?
Those 8 3-and-outs by Texas is the most 3-and-outs in a football game by a Big 12 team in the last 2 seasons.
So you have that stat to compete with, and a lot of that was due to predictable game plans, which has been a huge thorn in the ass of the Longhorn fans this entire year. Let's go back to what Darius and I were talking about last week, which was one of the good things we saw in that Kansas State game was the RPO, right? It created a lot of stress and put the linebackers and safeties in flux. And they ran the same formation but different plays out of that formation. There was a lot of things going on that you can do with an offense that has this many veterans in it. This game plan was vanilla. It was very, very much stubborn. It was, we're going to run these plays, and they're going to work. And if they don't, we're going to run them again. You can see that with this one stat. One RPO in that entire game. One traditional RPO.
And it was out of the same formation that they freaking ran it out of last week. If anybody listened to this podcast last week, what were we doing? We're begging for the same action, but just do it out of different looks. Texas, they lined up in that 11 personnel. Iowa State was on alert for it. Sam stuck the ball in there. The linebackers took about a half step. They still kind of stayed back. He pulls to try to hit behind them. It's not there. It ends up being, I believe, a tackle for 1 yard when Ellinger finally tried to take off. Then they didn't come back to it. I know middle school coaches that understand how to run the same play out of different looks. How Texas can pay these guys all these hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, and still come into a football game. In my opinion, their offense was unprepared to come into the game unprepared like they did, man. Heads deserved a roll for that. It was embarrassing. It was old school SEC football where you got some bad offense going on and it's being disguised as great defense. That was terrible.
And a lot of fans are taking a look at the offensive line and saying the offensive line played terribly. And why is this offensive line going backwards? What is happening here? And a lot of it is what they're putting on film isn't changing. The offensive line cannot beat a defense that already knows what is happening. You look at that 4th and 2. The linebacker knew what was happening, where it was going before the play even started. The defensive line knew where that play was going before the play even started. That's just an obvious example of what I'm talking about here. You can't beat a guy that already knows what is happening and is sprinting to that exact spot. That is why they look bad. And, you know, on top of Shackelford kind of being a little bit of exposed, you can't beat a team that knows what's happening. You can't set an edge for a team that already knows that where the edge is going to be. You can't set the line of scrimmage for a team that knows when and where you're running the ball. Yes, there are certain plays where one-on-one, yes, they're getting beat. But in the general grand scheme of things, they're getting out game planned here versus outplayed.
Having played it, University of Texas, Will, and having gone to a place like University of North Texas, right? All you hear about is all this talent, all this, you know, blah, 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 4-star, 5-star, all that crap. I'm telling you, that stuff is crap. It's crap. There are guys that peak in high school. There are guys that are studs, just like there's a guy that's the superstar in Little League, and then everybody becomes the same size. Folks develop at different rates. Texas, there's always been this false belief around that Texas program that, oh man, we got all these superstars. We can just go out there and folks are going to lay down for us and we're just natural. We're just better than everybody. And it's not the case. Okay. Everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time. You cut somebody out there, they're going to bleed red just like everybody else. But the coaching staff can feed into that as well. You talk about, oh, well, no matter what, you know, we're going to do what we do. Is it stubbornness? I think everybody has a little bit of a false reality about what they are there. And I mean, how many times does it have to happen before you wake up and look in the mirror and understand that something needs to change?
Again, I kind of disagree with you a little bit. And I think these guys probably...
Tell me, what about?
I'm talking about when it comes to strength, when it comes to raw athleticism.
The talent and stuff?
Yeah, when it comes to raw athleticism, Texas probably has some guys who are more raw athletic. But
that's the thing. Football is not about athleticism.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But when it comes to how they're being coached up and their understanding of the game and when they're being put in a good position to play, that's where Texas is lacking right now.
And why?
Exactly. I think at the end of the season, and Tom Herman took shots at different stat, you know, different journalists who are saying, hey, there's some issues in the locker room. I think at the end of the year, there need to be some changes in that locker room.
Yeah, I wonder who he was talking about, but those same journalists seem like they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Sure seems like they know what they're talking about. Then they're not just a mouthpiece of the program like some folks seem to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I mean, here's the thing is that team, there were some issues on that team, and let's go ahead and talk about some of those discipline issues beyond just broken plays that cost them 14 points. There was one broken play that cost them the game, and that's that offsides on that field goal, which the kicker missed if they don't do it. That is one of the captains of that team jumping offsides. And as a coach, you need to drill it into their head that even if that kicker makes that kick, it is fine because you have 2 minutes to drive and Sam Ellinger's kicking ass. You just don't give them that first down at any cost. And apparently, this isn't drilled into their head enough. It wasn't understood enough. And in the end, it cost you the game. And it almost cost you the game against Kansas State. It has cost you the game in games past with all of these penalties. And finally, a penalty was directly responsible for a loss.
I mean, hey, you saw it coming. We talked about it. And that's what's so frustrating
about
this whole thing. And that's the thing. We 14 points given up by senior captain Brandon Jones. The offsides on the field goal that was missed by senior captain Malcolm Roach. Okay, who selects the captains? You can talk all you want about all our players. No, it's the coaches that pick the captains. The players are a reflection of the coaching staff. No players more so than the freaking captains. So if they're not disciplined, how can the other guys be? And it makes me also wonder, well, I mean, on the coaching staff, again, they're a reflection of you. Are the coaches themselves even practicing what they preach? And is that why there's such an issue of buy-in like we've been hearing about behind the scenes and now we're seeing come to a head and actually cost them games and actual games? Focus, discipline is not, they're not, it's not something that you can fix overnight. This is year three now. This is who they are. This is what these guys are day in and day out in practice. And you knew it was going to end up showing up at some point. You knew it was. So that's where the underlying issue with this whole coaching staff, I think it starts there. It starts with them. That's what the problem is.
Right. And before we go to talking about the season in general and some of the issues and changes that need to be made over the offseason, I want to talk real quickly about the defense and Joseph Osai playing inside linebacker. Why? Joseph Osai, we talked about it. It's great. He can go back. Great. But just because he can go backwards doesn't mean that's how you use him. This dude showed you against Kansas State how good he is on the line of scrimmage. But you put him at inside linebacker and expect him to play as an inside linebacker. And I think it's a problem that has been with this Todd Orlando. I mean, Todd Orlando, they played great defense. But there's an inherent issue with Todd Orlando's defenses that kind of showed up during this season. Is that they're playing a play and not a position. So when that play breaks down, they don't know what to do. But what allows Todd Orlando to do is play these players in different positions. Like easily moving Osai from outside linebacker to inside linebacker. Moving Malcolm Roach to linebacker, back to defensive end, back to linebacker, back to nose tackle, back to defensive end. It's something that, you know, allows for them to be versatile. But at the very end of the game, you can see they're not assignment sound football. It's not assignment sound football. And it costs, you know, different issues in this game where Juwan Mitchell, who looks like he's regressing through the season because all he can do is blitz. It's issues like that that I'm looking at this defense and saying, yeah, they played well, but there's still huge issues that come up during these games.
I don't know. I have a hard time pounding too much on the defense because I feel like they've done their job the last 2 weeks. You know, Iowa State, that's a damn good Iowa State team. They have 14 possessions and Texas held them to 23 points. You know, they only converted 3 third downs. And they were 0-2 on 4th down. I thought the defense, you know, did their job. But to your point about guys playing out of position, absolutely. We've seen that with Texas, you know, pretty much. That's been standard for the past decade. Joseph Osai is a guy that, watch, Joseph Osai is going to be a guy that goes to the NFL a year or two from now. He's going to be an even better player there than he was at Texas. And everybody's going to wonder why or how that happens. And I think, yeah, like you said, he's being used out of position, but he's too much of a team player, too much of a, you know, a good kid to make up too much of a stink about it. But, you know, other guys on the team recognize guys being misused. And again, that could be another
guys
part
who are
of
no
the
longer
underlying
on the team are like Charles Omenihu.
Yeah. Yeah. He's free to say it now. See what I'm saying? He can say it now, but he couldn't say it while he was playing here. But you know, they're whispering to themselves. And it's been 3 years now. You've had your guys are in here now. You've had a couple of full cycles now. And you keep having these same issues. And you can't keep swapping out these players, man. It's some guys getting paid the big bucks that are going to have to be packing up some luggage.
Well, yeah. And I think we're not calling for Herman's job.
No.
We're not. But there are some major changes that need to happen this offseason. there's going to be a chopping block at the end of the season. We hinted about it on the board. I think one of the main things that needs to happen in this offseason is a rebalancing of the coaching room.
I agree.
Right now, there is a 7-4 split when it comes to offensive to defensive coaches. You have Tom Herman, who is basically overseeing what Tim Beck is doing, because Tim Beck is not being a competent play caller and offensive coordinator. We talked about that last year, and no changes were made. Then you have two wide receiver coaches. You have a tight end.
You know
coach.
What, though, real quick, if I can interrupt you real quick, we're talking about Tim Beck. I mean, wasn't the whole reason Herman hired, the whole reason Tom Herman was hired was because at the time, coming out of Houston, he had been from Ohio State. He was viewed as one of the brightest young minds, you know, offensive minds in college football, right? Did that not play a big part in his hire? He was under Urban Meyer. We know we saw things like that, but now he's supposed to be a guy that's at the top of his profession. And 3 years later, are we finding out that this is the same Tom Herman that at Houston the year he got hired at Texas? He lost to, who was that? Was it Navy? He lost to Navy. He lost to Connecticut. Okay. Maybe these flaws have always been there, man. Maybe they have, but we get blinded by the big wins against Oklahoma, the win over Florida State. Hell, he had the defense had a guy. They had freaking Ed Oliver in the middle wrecking havoc. They had Greg Ward back there running around if a play broke down. All we found out that he wasn't who we thought he was.
Well, I think we'll see if he can make the hard decisions to fix his program. Because right now, you went into a season where you are expecting to at least compete for the Big 12, and you are no longer doing that. He's going to have to make changes because things are broken. You came into this season with 8 wins being the minimum. Now 8 wins is a best case scenario for the regular season. There are changes that are going to need to happen in the offseason. And like I was saying, rebalancing the coaching room. You have 7 offensive coaches with Tom Herman on top, and you have 4 defensive coaches. You need to change that. You need to bring in some fresh faces in that offensive staff. You probably need to get rid of Wareheim. Probably need to get rid of Maringer. And you probably need to jump back. Get somebody, you know, a good cop coach, a few of them, into your staff. One defensive coach who you can add to your defensive staff, and a good cop wide receiver, and an offensive coordinator who honestly hasn't been falling forward like Tim Beck has.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything. I don't know. I can't say that I've seen anything out of the tight ends the past 2 years that makes me excited about, you know, what their coach is doing or about production from that position being something Texas can rely on. So, you know, I'm fine with Wareheim leaving. I've heard some things behind the scenes about, you know, about Coach Maringer as far as, you know, personality things. You know, wide receivers is a position where you know, you need a guy at that spot that can just bring in some talent and coach some guys up and get along with the players.
Right.
So, yeah, tight end and wide receiver could definitely that could be something that gets switched out. I like Tim Beck as a quarterback coach. I don't like him being involved with creating the offensive game plan or anything like that. So I'm with you 100% on that. You know, Herb Hand has been he started off, you know, I wanted to give him a raise, 3-4 games into the season. And he's a pretty good recruiter and stuff like that. But, you know, like you said, the offensive line has regressed as the season has worn on. So I don't know how much of that is a product of being a part of Tim Beck / Tom Herman's offense, you know, their philosophy. But as far as placing blame and things like that, ever since guys have gotten healthier defensively, it's been the offense that's been dragging. I think some changes are in order on that side of the ball. And I'll be perfect. I will start with the tight ends and the wide receivers coach. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, those are going to be the two that you immediately need to get a change of face there, especially your wide receivers coaches. Because as we've talked about, if you want to hold on to Brennan Eagles after a game like that, and he's going to be your number one dude next year, you're probably going to need a new face in that locker room.
And receiver is an easy fix. Tight ends are easy. It's not a, you know, that you can make those changes without completely overhauling, you know, your coordinator and O-line coach and stuff like that, you know?
Right. Right. And like you said, I think the defense, I think the change that needs to happen there is more of a Todd Orlando looking inward evaluation rather than a huge change of staff there.
I would be fine with it, with the defensive staff, you know, standing pat. you know, what could you do? You play three linemen at a time. You don't need to bring in another D-line coach. You know, when I was at Texas, they had Giles there with Bo Davis. You don't need another D-line coach. Todd Orlando handles the LBs. You got Washington and Niver in the secondary. All four of those guys are really, really, you know, you would think solid coaches. Those are solid names. They're solid guys you believe in. If I had to pick one spot, I guess you could look at those cornerbacks, even though you can chalk a lot of their struggles up to just the youth and lack of experience. The safeties, how do I explain, you know, a senior like Brandon Jones busting like that? Well, he's had a few mental busts this year. Tyler Owens came in and wasn't ready to play against TCU. If I'm really, you know, pointing fingers, I guess either one of secondary, both corner and safety have had their ups and downs. But I guess if you were going to make a change, it would have to be one of those two guys.
I think the change that needs to happen is you need to bring in a coach on the defensive side of the ball.
Where would you put him, though?
Put him in with the linebacker room. I think that is one place where you let Todd Orlando focus on overall scheme and you have him coach linebacker. And I think that is something that could happen there. But I really do think the offensive staff is where there need to be changes because as I just said, 8 wins at the beginning of the season, that was, I wouldn't say worst case scenario, because 7 wins, 6 wins is worst case scenario, but 8 wins,
eight,
would you?
8 wins was the worst case scenario for eight, 9 wins is what you thought worst case acceptable, I can live with.
Yeah, exactly.
We're still headed on the right track.
But right now, that is best case scenario.
And that is extremely alarming. And again, with the likelihood being that, they're not going to win this game Saturday. All the signs are pointing to. And then, you know, Tech's going to give them everything they can handle and more on. Is that Thanksgiving or the day before or something like that?
Day after.
This thing's got a chance.
Saturday? Yeah, it's Saturday.
It's got a chance to get it's got a chance to get really bad.
Yeah, and so if Tom Herman wants to fix this staff, if Herman wants to stay at the level he is as the head coach of Texas football, he needs to start making the hard choices. He needs to not be as stubborn as he is when it comes to making changes, which has become what he is known for.
Well, if he doesn't, I think you'll see a change get made. Not after this season, but after next season, absolutely. Texas just gave their athletic director, Chris Del Conte, another extension.
Yeah, 8 years.
So he's not going anywhere. He hasn't made any hires. As far as the big sports since he's been here, you better believe he's itching to get started really soon. So
don't start getting right.
Yeah, and don't forget Texas lost to TCU where he just came from. So I think the clock is ticking. You know, folks will be on notice if they're not already.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I think on that note, let's go ahead and start looking forward. Less forward, but to next weekend. Talk a little bit of Baylor with our friend Sam Bradshaw. And now I'm joined by Sam Bradshaw, the guy who does the X's and O's for a Sick and 365. Sam, how's it up there? And you're in Dallas, right?
Yes, I am. And thanks for having me on.
No worries. Really fast, for everybody who doesn't know, you also kind of follow the rest of the Big 12. Doing a lot of stats and X's and O's work for most every other team in the Big 12. So I do want to ask you about what are your thoughts so far on how Texas' season has played out and what you've seen so far when you watch film on the Longhorns?
Well, the thing you're seeing with Texas, I mean, the record's 6-4, and they've been 500 in games decided by a single score. So they could be having a lot better season. It could have potentially turned a little worse. I mean, offensively, you're getting about 10% more yards per drive than your opponents are typically giving up to other Power 5 teams. And then defensively, the problem is you're giving up about that much. The percentage of the plays that you give up that are 25 yards or more in the air, that's going to be one of the bigger stats that Texas is struggling with, just the explosive passing plays. That has been a real backbreaker for them because they've done a good job limiting tailback carries on the ground. With the yards per carry that they're giving up, it's tough sledding on the ground against them, but they just keep giving up those big passing plays that are just backbreakers for defense in the Big 12. They're young, and I do think they will get a lot better over the next couple of years because there's only so much first, second, and third year guys are really going to be able to do for you as your nucleus. That's been a struggle that Baylor fans can identify with in the 2017 and 2018 seasons, for sure. And they're starting to turn the corner on that this year.
Well, it's funny you say they're starting to when they're 9-1. How has Matt Rhule really turned around this Baylor football program? It's been a stark contrast from, what, 3 years ago?
Yes, it's a stark contrast from 2017 when you only had about 17, when you only had about seven offensive linemen that you could really rely on. Once you got into the heart of the season, you had 20 plus guys lost for the year. You had another 20 plus miss multiple games. And a lot of the young guys that were seeing time over that time period, and a lot of the recruits Rhule's brought in or the guys he inherited that he has developed, those guys are now juniors, seniors, experienced sophomores. And you're starting to get to the point where you're seeing where he wants to go with it. Guys like second-year tackle Connor Galvin, who's 6'7", 302, and just got back in the lineup, is really solidifying the offensive line. A guy like Sam Tecklenburg, who was a tight end under Briles, and then the prior to 2017 moved to offensive line. Instead of being a recently converted tight end who's underweight, he's now big enough to be effective at the point of attack. Defensively, you've got guys like James Lynch, who was a talented freshman, but was a freshman a couple years ago. And you've got guys like Blake Lynch, who has played basically everything, came to Baylor as a receiver. Then he was a corner, saw some spot duty at running back. Then he was a safety. And now he's at strong side linebacker. And he gives you a plus athlete at the position that is 6'3", 225. And just up and down the roster, you see examples of him developing guys, and they're really starting to come into their own. I mean, some positions are further along than others, but they've been able to do a good job with development, and there's not a whole lot of holes on the roster right now. I mean, there's a couple notable ones, but you're able to put a pretty competitive team together. I mean, they're not going to overwhelm anybody right now. They're on schedule to start doing that here in the next couple of years if they continue on the track they're going.
So what does this Baylor offense look like on the field, and really what makes it tick? What are they trying to do every play?
Well, the general idea of what they want to do is they want to be a pro-style spread that's loosely modeled after the Chip Kelly Oregon schemes from back in the day. And in order to do that, one of the co-OCs was actually working for Kelly with the 49ers before Baylor hired him. One of the guys that was almost the offensive coordinator in 2017, who was actually hired and then decided to go west where he has a little more roots, was offensive coordinator at Oregon. I think it was Helfrich's OC that they brought in temporarily. So there's a ton of carryover with that. So it's definitely spread to run, but pro style. So this is not the Briles offense where you're a spread to run, but you have a very simplified passing tree. This is much more of a pro system that can go deep on you, but they also do a much better job of getting those possession routes or using pro level concepts that can really dissect some coverages in a little different ways than Baylor was doing from 2008 to 2016. Personnel wise, the guy that makes it go is Charlie Brewer. He is a very accurate and smart quarterback. He doesn't have the biggest arm, but he can run well.
Didn't get an offer from Texas, for anybody who was wondering.
Yeah, I'm sure the announcers will only remind everyone watching about that fact. What's the over-under, 20?
I think that's about it, like 20 and 22 and a half, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. I might still take the over with them, but but no, he's an accurate player. He's an accurate quarterback, makes good decisions, has good footwork, keeps his eyes downfield. He can run a little bit. I mean, he's blowing out Mike Leach's criteria in everything but arm strength, and Mike Leach has that as a nice to have, much like being fast. He's tough. He's a great leader. If the ball's in his hands at the end of the game with a chance to beat the opposing team, we've seen this so many times over the last couple of years. He's going to get you down the field and get you in position to do something. Even if it doesn't work out, he's going to at least do that. And the vast majority of time is going to work out. And there's been a lot of interesting drives over the last 2.5 years that Brewer's been able to pull that off,
including one last year against Texas. How has Charlie Brewer stepped up his game this year? Is it what has been that one thing, that one factor that has really improved this year?
Well, Charlie was already pretty good, so he's definitely developing, getting better. But a lot of people don't realize just how much Baylor's been shuffling on the offensive line to try and game the system with the redshirt rules for a couple guys that didn't redshirt at different times in their careers. And in the midst of that, Charlie's really had to do a lot, both throwing and running, to try and supplement the offense. And they've put a little more on him than they have in prior years. And he's responded well. I mean, he had a couple bad games against Texas Tech and I think one other where he got a little careless with the ball, but for the most part, he shouldered the load very well and done a good job leading the team despite having a bit of a revolving door up front as a result of some of these decisions.
Charlie Brewer is probably going to have to be helped out there with the run game and Jermichael Hasty. What is that run game consisted of at Baylor? What is the schemes that they try to trot out on the field there?
Well, like most of the Big 12, you're going to see a lot of inside zone. You're going to see the guard and tackle counter. You're going to see power. And you're going to see it where they'll hand the ball off to the running back doing it. They'll design those same blocking schemes with the quarterback. They'll have a quarterback read where the quarterback can take it outside and the running back can go inside. They'll have bash reads where the back is going outside away from where the blocking is going to. And the quarterback has the option to go inside. But that's all pretty standard fare for the Big 12. They'll do a little bit with different formations, but as far as their spread sets, that's going to be the heaviest dose of what you're going to get from Baylor. They do like to get into that big power eye set when they get into short yardage. They'll mix that in, and then from there, they're usually going strong side power or weak side ISO. And then they've got some complementary plays built off of that as a small thing that defenses have to account for. It's usually not, even going back to Temple, it's never been the base of their offense, but it's something they mix in there. And if you don't respond to it well, you'll end up like South Florida did one year where it was a closely contested game. And then they figured out this corner does not want to take on a block. We're going to run strong side power at him for the next 20 plays and see how it goes. And that was the longest night of that kid's life.
I was going to, so the next thing I want to do is I want to go to the other side of the coin here and take a look at the passing game. You also obviously have Denzel Mims. How are they using Denzel Mims and the rest of their wide receiver crew to attack different defenses?
Well, Denzel Mims is your classic size speed matchup at the X position. He's usually going to be on the outside and winning those one-on-one matchups for you against the other team's best corner usually. And you guys have seen him for the last couple of years. He's got enough speed to take the top off the defense. He can go up, make the contested catch, and he can be a bit of a load to bring down after the catch.
He's one of those crazy Big 12 wide receivers that just seem to be everywhere.
Yes, there are no weeks off in the Big 12. Everybody's got at least one guy they can throw it up to. Also on the outside, you've got Tyquan Thornton, who is also 6'3". He's a little skinnier than Mims, but he might be the best deep threat on the team in terms of being able to go up and make a contested catch, but also have the wheels to just take it to the house. And then you also got Chris Platt, who is a Big 12 track guy who's back for his sixth year after a couple injuries. He is the fastest guy on the team and is just blazing fast. Those are your primary guys outside. And when they go inside, Josh Fleeks and RJ Sneed are going to be the two primary guys. Sneed's a little bigger and Fleeks is a little faster, but they're both big play guys who can make a contested catch and make you miss in the open field.
That Chris Platt thing where he's the fastest guy on the team, that's surprising because you also have Christian Morgan on that team who, if I remember correctly, ran something like a 4.3 or 4.2, something around those 40. It's crazy.
I don't think he was that fast in the 40. I think he had like the highest spark time in the nation or highest
like
spark
that.
Score.
Yeah.
Where you took the scores of what's their vertical, what's their broad jump, what's their power throw, what's their 40 time. I think when you roll all that into one number, I think he really
killed
blew
it.
The doors
yeah.
off of that. I
he
think
was just
that's
so incredibly raw,
there.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a backup at safety that a lot of Baylor fans are looking forward to seeing a little bit more of next year when he gets in there full time.
So let's go ahead and put it this way. If you're the defensive coordinator of Texas, if you're Todd Orlando, I ask this question every week. People probably are so tired of hearing it. But if you're Todd Orlando, how are you attacking Baylor? Where is the matchup that you're looking to take advantage of, or the formations that you're looking to take advantage of?
Well, Baylor is they're in year three of a rebuild, and you've got a lot of moving parts on the offensive line. They've tried to game the system with a couple guys that had to play right as they arrived at Baylor, and they were able to keep Giancarlo Valentin out of the lineup long enough to where he could basically play every game from now on and still redshirt with the four-game redshirt rule. But they've kept him out, and they tried to keep Xavier Newman out, but it became clear they needed to get him in there. And they burned his redshirt halfway through the West Virginia game. And then they're just getting Connor Galvin back from injury. He'd been out from Kansas State until early in the OU game. He finally came back into the lineup. And then from there, things settled down. Between Baylor's revolving door on the offensive line and having some still developing players at tight end that have a little bit of different strengths, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm probably going to try and play over the top. And whatever aggression I have for Baylor, I am going to try and do from a pretty controlled setup. I want to make them block me is kind of the way I would view it if I was trying to attack Baylor. Now, I don't know that Texas has the front three to get consistent pressure on Brewer doing that. So you'd probably have to mix things up a little bit. But I would caution against blitzing as much as I know Orlando's had the reputation of doing this year.
Oh, really? You caution against blitzing? I bet that's going to be listened to for sure.
But no, it's one of those things. If there's a weakness on this offense, it's the fact that the offensive line is still a work in progress and the tight end position as well. And the skill talent is outstanding. I mean, Jamichael Hasty at running back is outstanding. John Lovett's a big play waiting to happen. And Tristan Ebner's probably the best open field runner Baylor's had at the running back position since like Seastrunk was there. And Ebner is much better in the passing game, was a high school wide receiver and runs routes like it, catches the ball like it. You got the skill guys at receiver, quarterback, and running back to do a lot of damage, but you're really trying on Baylor's side to scheme things to where your offensive line is holding up to protect Brewer, and you're using Brewer as a runner to give that line some help in the run game where he can account for somebody or he can force them to account for him in a certain way. While the tight ends are solid, I don't think they've got that one all-around guy that just allows you to not tip off your tendency based on who's in there.
Well, that sounds pretty par for the course when you're doing a rebuild, especially in the state of Texas, where finding skill guys is like finding salt in the ocean, but getting the big guys and giving them time to get the weight on them, that's the difficult part, especially at the next level in the NCAA.
Yeah, and I think that – and they're making progress. I think the line, now that they've got the full complement of everybody in there – I do think it's better than it was last year, and last year was light years better than it was the year before. So they're certainly on the right track. I just don't think they're where you want to be every year for what Rule is trying to establish here, where you're a physical team that can salt a game away, just imposing your will on the ground. I still think they're a year, maybe two away from having that up front.
So let's go ahead and take a look at the other side of the ball here. And for a Longhorn fan who's never seen this Baylor defense, what will they be seeing on the field Saturday?
First and foremost, you're going to see a completely different scheme than the vast majority of what you've seen the last couple of years. What used to be just a bit of a passing down changeup is now the base defense. So putting it in Texas defensive terms, Texas's defense, when they're in that nickel set, can look a little bit like a four-man front with a nickel if you put that B-backer up on the line like he's a rush end. Well, they basically took the B-backer off the field and put another safety on there. And then they asked the front three to two-gap a lot, they really want to protect their Will linebacker and their Mike backer, and they're going to make you execute over and over and over again, very similar to how Iowa State does it. You're going to see them ask a lot of their front three. They'll mix in some blitzes. Don't get me wrong. They're not just going to rush three and drop eight all game, but it's definitely a much more conservative look than they've had the last couple years. And I think the percentage of plays that go for 20 yards against this defense has effectively been cut in half from last year, which is insane.
Well, it's interesting that we were talking about getting your guys, your front guys, big in the next level, especially in Texas, is a difficult thing to do. But y'all have guys like Blake Lynch, Bravion Roy, James Lynch, like you were talking about, James Lockhart, guys who they're not as big as some of the other guys, but they're playing big. How are those guys affecting this game?
Well, there's two guys that are really all three of them up front are outstanding, but the two that really jump off the film are nose tackle Bravion Roy, who was a highly touted holdover from the prior staff, who this staff has really done a great job developing. He's 6'1", 333. He can two-gap. He can be a quality inside pass rusher. Was doing really good against Oklahoma early on until the play count just got too high for a 330-pound guy to continue bearing a lot of the pass rushing load for you. But you've got him at nose, and then probably the biggest freak on the defense that doesn't look like he'd be it is James Lynch. I think he leads the Big 12 in sacks, or at least I think he did before the Oklahoma game. He's 6'4", 295, runs a 4.8. He can rush you off the edge. He can pass rush inside. He could potentially hold up as a nose two-gapping if you needed him to at the college level. He can play all over the line. It's a lot like a college version of a J.J. Watt-style player where he's got that big frame. He can play inside. He can play outside. He can be a pass rush, mismatch at any of those positions. You can ask him to two-gap a little. He's probably the best player on this defense, and he's outstanding. He's another one of these guys that they were able to identify early, and after a couple of years in the weight room, the end result is very impressive.
And then you have to take a look at that secondary, which is just a chock full of seniors right now, or at least third-year guys, with Graylin Arnold being your youngest dude, and he's a junior.
Yeah, he came in 2016 and was starting at corner that year as a true freshman.
Right.
During the time he was sitting out, they decided to move him to safety, and he's taken to that role outstandingly because he is the field side safety of the three and takes a lot more of the issues in coverage. He's one of the holdovers from the prior staff. So is Jameson Houston, who's a really athletic 5'11", 200 corner. Had an outstanding game matched up on Tylan Wallace up in Stillwater. And then you got another senior in Chris Miller, who is a very fierce, big-hitting safety in the middle of the defense, who just kind of takes that middle rover position where he's kind of middle safety, hovering a little deeper than where the linebackers are. The blocking schemes don't necessarily account for him, and he's usually the free hitter against the run. And then they've got another holdover from the prior staff, and Henry Black, who's a converted corner at 6'2", 206, and he's kind of more your boundary side safety. Tejada is a pretty solid corner who's also a holdover from the prior staff's recruiting efforts. But one young guy who may have turned the game in Stillwater towards Baylor's favor, down near the goal line, 6'1", 186, true sophomore Kalon Barnes, picked off a pass on the goal line. They were trying to throw a fade from that diamond formation that Oklahoma State uses annually. Barnes picks it off and starts going down the field with it, and that was a huge break for Baylor right around the middle of that game, and Baylor was able to pull away later on, and that was a huge, huge moment in that game that kept Oklahoma State from building any kind of lead at the point.
Well, that's what Longhorn fans have to look forward to. But if you're Tim Beck, if you're Tom Herman taking a look at this defense and the nasty guys they got up front and the talent they have in the backfield, how are you trying to penetrate this? Where are you trying to go against this Baylor defense?
I think you have to do a lot to try and get that running game at least to the point where you can force them into some predictable looks. you want to be able to use Ellinger's legs, whether he's carrying it or whether he's just reading somebody. You want to get him involved in helping you handle the front three, at least in the early portion of the game. One of the things Texas has been very good at this year is staying on the field when they get to third down or fourth down. It's been one of the statistics that I actually highlighted in the stats analysis that I dropped today for this matchup. And I think against power conference teams, Texas is converting on third or fourth down over half the time they get to third down, which is very high.
Yeah.
And if there's one weak spot this Baylor defense has had, it's getting off the field on third down. They're outstanding getting pressure. They're outstanding limiting big plays. They don't necessarily allow high percentage of completions. They don't necessarily allow a lot per run. But if you can stay ahead of the chains and put together first downs, that's where this defense can have a little bit of a vulnerability. They're so focused on not giving up the big play, they can give up the drive extending play. And that's ultimately what really hurt this defense down the stretch against Oklahoma, is that tactic works well when your offense is out there. But if your offense sputters for one reason or another, the play count gets high, and then those big guys are having to do some of the more tiring work in football of having to two-gap and having to be the primary pass rushers over and over and over again. They were on the field for like 95 plays against Oklahoma. And by the end of it, they were gassed. They were still able to force a field goal at the end to give them a chance to go down and win it on the next drive, had they been able to do that. But there's a noticeable difference. If I'm Texas, I'm scheming to get consistent gains and move the chains. I don't think you're going to have much success trying to go for the big play. I don't think you're just going to be able to impose your will trying to run against this front from more conventional sets. I think they'll be able to scheme you successfully on that, and I think they'll be able to protect those linebackers, and they'll be able to penetrate and get some tackles for loss if you are predictable in the way you're trying to run on them.
Well, that won't stop Tom Herman from trying to set the tone or try to out-muscle them up front. We'll see how it works for Tom Herman. But again, Sam, thank you so much, man, for coming on. Again, Sam Bradshaw from Sikkim365. Sam, where can we find you online aside from Sikkim365.com?
The primary other place to find me online is my Twitter account, which is Baylor_S11. So Baylor_S11. That's where I tweet out most of the commentary and articles that I have regarding Baylor and the Big 12. And periodically through the year, I'll do different Big 12 stats articles that are usually free, where I cover the entire conference in totality and who's doing what compared to their schedule, who's doing successfully, who's doing poorly, or how do the bowl matchups look for the Big 12 this year. I remember I did pre-bowl and post-bowl post-mortem on all the conference last year, but that's where to find me.
Yeah, and generally the guys who I bring on this show are guys who are good follows outside of just when Texas is playing the certain team that the person is representing. So y'all go follow Sam. He's a great follow. His work is good. He's one of the more knowledgeable guys about the game in the Big 12. So please go follow Sam. Again, Sam, thank you for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
But that'll be your 4th and 5 this week, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Darius Terrell, my man, where can we find you?
Hey, y'all can find me on Twitter at DTerrell, 2 R's, 2 L's, 05. Shoot me a message. I love to talk to you all, just not about about the Myles Garrett situation or Colin Kaepernick, because you might not agree with me.
You guys can find us on thefootballbrainiacs.com, where you'll find our writing and our talkings. And you guys can just find us in general. That's texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Or you guys can find our other shows on the Hornscast channel right here, what you're listening to on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Spotify, or any other podcasting platform you guys can find out there. But on that note, we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.